Agnan Janash Lakya Chakshuran Meditam Yenatasmai Shigurve Namaha. So it's important to observe the appearance and disappearance days of these great personalities. So a little bit about the history of Ramanujacharya, or before Ramanujacharya appeared. And first we'll talk about his philosophy. He's the acharya of one of the main sampradayas. I think everybody knows the four sampradayas. There's the Lakshmi sampradaya, Brahma sampradaya, Kumara sampradaya, and Rudra sampradaya. So he's the acharya in the modern day of the Sri sampradaya, and therefore he taught something called Sri Vaishnavism. You know, Sri means Lakshmi. So, and of course the mood in the Sri sampradaya of worship is the mood of awe and reverence. It's a Vaikuntha mood. If anyone's been to their main temple in Sri Rangam, you would see this. They're chanting all the time, Om Namo Narayanaya, Om Namo Narayanaya, over the loudspeakers. You hear this all the time. Anyone's been there? You've been there. So you hear this, Om Namo Narayanaya, Om Namo Narayanaya, which is wonderful. It's actually simply wonderful. When Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was in Sri Rangam, he was feeling separation from Lord Jagannath. So what he did is he carved his own Jagannath deities with his own hands in Sri Rangam. And to this day, you will find Lord Chaitanya's Jagannath deities being worshipped right opposite in the same street where Venkatabhata's house is. Venkatabhata, of course, was the great devotee who housed Chaitanya Mahaprabhu for 4 months in the rainy season. And also Venkatabhata's son, Gopal Bhatta Goswami, became one of the principal followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And another thing is Gopal Bhatta Goswami's uncle, Prabhavananda Saraswati, who also became one of the principal followers, and they preached in Sri Vrindavana. So, in Sri Vaishnavism, let's say the manifestation of the philosophy that they preach is called Vishishtadvaita, which means qualified monism. It's interesting that Vishishtadvaita, amongst the four sampradayas, is the closest thing to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teaching of Achincha Veda Aveda Tattva, which means that everything is one and different simultaneously, inconceivably. And the typical example Prabhupada gives in that regard is you have the sun, or the sunshine, and the presiding deity of the sun. Does everyone understand that example? Well, I'll explain it some more. That the sunshine can be equated to the Brahman, which is everywhere, or the energy of the Lord, which is everywhere, because everything is the Lord's energy, Sarvakal Vidam Brahma. And Vishnu Shakti Pura Prokta Shikshakyakitata Pura Avidyakarma Sanginya Shruchir Shakti Yishite, the threefold energies of the Lord, the material, spiritual, and us, the living entities. So anyway, the sunshine is the energy of the Lord, and then, of course, then you have the and then you have the sun globe, and then you have the personality of the sun. So the personality of the sun is equated with Bhagavan, that is, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So you have different manifestations of the Supreme Lord. You have the Lord, the Super Soul, and the Lord's energies, or the Brahman effulgence. Anyway, this is a Achincha Veda Veda Tattva philosophy. So in the Madhvacharya Sampradaya, it's a little technical. They're preaching Shuddhadvaita. In Nambarka, which is the Kumaras, four Kumara Sampradaya, they teach Dvaita Advaita, Dvaita Advaita. And in the Vishnu Swami, it's Shuddha Advaita. Anyway, it's a little bit complicated. We're not going to go through the description of these different philosophies. So, we are followers of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who taught Achincha Veda Veda Tattva. And our philosophy is actually more similar to Ramanujacharya or the Sri Sampradaya than it is to Madhvacharya, which is interesting. So a little history about Srinipad Ramanujacharya. Previous to Ramanujacharya, you had the Alvars. The Alvars were the poets, the very pure devotees who were poets of Krishna consciousness, specifically worshipping Lord Vishnu and Brahman. And there were many of them. I forget how many Alvars there were. And some of them were ladies. And they met in Sri Rangam. There's actually a palace there in Sri Rangam, or a meeting hall, which they met. And that meeting hall is called the Meeting Hall of 1,000 Pillars. Have you seen that too when you went there? That's right next to the... It's right next to the temple of Sri Rangam. It has like 1,000 pillars in the temple. That's the traditional architecture. And they would meet there and recite their poetry and discuss Krishna consciousness. So in the year 908 A.D., there was this great devotee named Nathamuni. He compiled the hymns, that is the poetry of the Alvars and the Vedas, and he put them together in a very concise form. And those later became what's known as the Tamil Vedas. In other words, the literatures in the Tamil language, which is South India, of course. Tamil Nadu is the state. Every state in India has a different language. In Andhra Pradesh, you have a different language. And of course, Uttar Pradesh, you speak Hindi. In Bihar, it's a different variety of Hindi, which many of the devotees here speak a similar Hindi to that. So anyway, in every state there's a different language. So the Tamil Vedas were compiled by this Nathamuni in 908. And these Tamil Vedas are actually sung today by the Brahmanas in Tamil Nadu. Actually, most of it's interesting also that most of the pujaris, even in Andhra Pradesh, are from Tamil Nadu rather than from Andhra Pradesh. Mm. So it's a very Brahminical state in South India. So what happened is that Nathamuni, this little history of Nathamuni, is that Nathamuni had a son. His son was named Ishwaramuni. It was the Muni family. Muni, Ishwaramuni, Nathamuni. Anyway, so his son died in a very early age. And this son was the father of another great acharya named Jamunacharya. And we're going to be speaking a little bit about Jamunacharya. So Nathamuni, when his son died, he became completely upset with this world, and he just took sannyas. Because he saw that this material world is a place of misery. That no matter what sort of relationship you have, sooner or later that relationship will be broken by the time factor. Whether it is your wife, or whether it is your children, or whether it's your father or mother, whatever relationship you have will be broken, except for spiritual relationships. Like Prabhupada said, that the guru and disciple live together if the disciple follows the order of the guru and is dedicated to the mission of the guru. So Prabhupada said he and his guru were never separated. So those relationships, devotee relationships too, relationships between different devotees on the spiritual platform, can be considered eternal relationships. Like Prabhupada said, we have an ISKCON in this world, and we will have an ISKCON in the spiritual world. And Prabhupada, one time, referring to this Mr. Nair, who tried to cheat us in Bombay, he said, and you will all go back except for Mr. Nair to the spiritual world. So when we go back, we will all be together again. So you better learn to get along with each other now. Because if you can't get along with each other now, you're not going to go back to the spiritual world. So, you know, they, if you go to the spiritual world and you look and you see, oh my God, there he is. There he is again. I can't live this spiritual world. As they say, the spiritual world is not big enough for both of us. If you think like that, you're staying here. So you better learn how to love all the devotees. Very important. No enemies. If you have an enemy amongst the devotees, you've got problems. And you should love everyone. All the devotees. Love all living entities. Yastu sarvani bhutani atman evanu pashyati. See, all living entities connected to Krishna. Anyway, so this Natamuni took sannyas, and he had his grandson, of course, was Jamunacharya, the famous Jamunacharya. So the famous Jamunacharya got entangled in this material world in a very interesting way. He actually became a king, even though he was from a Brahminical family. And the way that happened was very interesting. Once upon a time, Jamunacharya's guru was told he had to pay taxes to the king. Now, traditionally, gurus, or, you know, Brahmins wouldn't pay taxes. You know, it'd be the Vaishyas, traditionally mostly the Vaishyas and Shudras, like that, and Kshatriyas, they would pay some money. But anyway, the king would never take money from the Brahmins. So this king was the king of Chola. It's a province in South India. And so he said, basically, the guru has to pay taxes, or he has to argue with the court pundit and defeat him. And if he doesn't defeat him, he's put in jail. Or he's killed. You know, there's the whole story like that. And so Jamunacharya became very upset that his guru was taxed like that. So he said, you know, I'm going to go and argue with this court pundit. So he went and to the court pundit. He's only 12 years old, remember, this is Jamunacharya. He's only 12 years old. He goes to the court and says, I'm challenging the court pundit. And the king said, he's a kid. What is he doing here? But the queen actually said, I think he's more intelligent. And the king said, no, he's not more intelligent. And the queen said, I'll bet you. So the queen and the king had a bet. And the bet was that if Jamunacharya won, the king would give half of his kingdom to Jamunacharya. And if Jamunacharya lost, the queen would become the obedient servant of the king. I guess she wasn't such a submissive servant before. But that was, anyway, that was the deal. So they had the deal. And then Jamunacharya he immediately defeated this pundit by posing three questions. He said, my dear pundit, I want you to defeat these three questions. And the three questions were as follows. Defeat the statement, in other words. Your mother is not barren. In other words, he'd have to prove that the pundit would have to prove his mother is barren. Barren means no children, of course. And how can you prove your mother has had no children? Because you're there. You know, it doesn't make sense. So Jamunacharya said you have to prove that. And then the second thing you have to prove is the king. Well, the statement is the king is righteous, so you have to disprove that. You have to prove that the king is unrighteous. So who wants to prove that the king is unrighteous? Because that's a great offense and you get killed. And then the third thing he told them to disprove is the statement that the queen is chaste. So in other words, the pundit would have to prove that the queen is unchaste, which is another offense. So therefore, the pundit said, I can't do any of these things. And you can't either. And Jamunacharya said, yes, I can. Here we go. And he said, well, the first one, that your mother, I have to prove that your mother is barren, has never, you know, basically not have children. Then he pulls out a quote from the Vedic literature and he says, a woman who's only had one child is barren. So he actually proves that point. Then the second point about the king being righteous, He is able to disprove that the king is righteous. He says the king accepts the karma of all the citizens, therefore he's unrighteous. And of course, temple presidents also have to accept all the karma of all the devotees in the temple. The temple president graveyard. So, yeah, anyway. Any volunteers to be temple president? No. So, anyway, so then the third one about the queen being chaste, he had to prove that the queen is unchaste. And Jhumunacharya said, I can do that, because the king is the representative of all the demigods. So in one sense, the queen is married to all the demigods. I mean, that's worse than the Pandavas, you know, the five Pandavas married to Draupadi. There's, you know, so many millions of demigods, 33 million demigods, and they're all married to one lady. That's pretty unchaste. So in this way, he won and he got half the kingdom, and Jhumunacharya became known as Alabanduru. That means he was conquered like that. And as a result of that, he became completely absorbed in being a king. I mean, obviously, when you become a king, you have so much material opulence. You know, people are, you got all these young girls fanning you all the time, feeding you grapes, like that. Like you see in the, some of these series, you know, the Hindi Mahabharata and everything like that, or the Ramayana, you see Ravana just sitting there and being fanned by all the young girls. And so he became a little enamored by the whole thing. This is a pastime. We don't want to criticize him. So Natamuni, who was his grandfather, wanted to extract him from this situation. So the way to extract someone from a situation, basically, is to feed them. So he did it with the tongue, actually. Because he had his disciple, Natamuni had his disciple named Nambi, provide spinach, you know, very tasty, some sort of tasty greens and spinach for Jhumunacharya every day. He wasn't able to see Jhumunacharya, but he provided this nice food. So one day, he didn't provide the food, and Jhumunacharya said, hey, where's my spinach? Where's that tasty spinach? And the cook said, the guy didn't come today to bring it. And then Jhumunacharya said, I want to see him. And then when this Nambi, who was a follower of Natamuni, came, he preached to Jhumunacharya. He said, basically, you know, you're wasting your human form of life. He had an opportunity to see Jhumunacharya. And then Jhumunacharya at that point renounced everything, renounced the kingdom, and became the great acharya, previous acharya to Ramanujacharya of the Sri Sampradaya. And, you know, his court headquarters was there in Sri Rangam. Okay, so then now we'll get to Ramanujacharya. One of Jhumunacharya's disciples was named Sri Shailapurna, who was one of the chief followers of Jhumunacharya. And he had two sisters, one whose name was Bhudevi and the other one was named Sridevi. And Bhudevi was the mother of Ramanujacharya. And of course, he's called Ramanujacharya because it's considered an incarnation of Lakshman. Everyone understands that? Rama Anuja. You know, Rama Anuja, the younger brother of Rama. So Ramanujacharya's father was called the Suri Keshavacharya, and he appeared near Madras, actually, in a place called Kanchipuram. You've been to Kanchipuram too? Kanchipuram is a very interesting but beautiful place right near Madras. And there's many deities. There's Vishnu Kanchi, there's Shiva Kanchi, and the Pujaris and the Brahmanas of the Shiva Kanchi and Vishnu Kanchi are always arguing with each other over who's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So anyway, he was in Kanchipuram. He appeared there. And when he grew older, he began to associate with a great disciple of Jhumunacharya who was from a Shudra class. And this great disciple's name was Kanchipurna. So Ramanujacharya got married at 16 years of age. That was the tradition there. Then they married the boys young, and the girls, of course, very young, even younger than that. His father died, and he accepted as his guru an impersonalist, the most famous guru. His name was Yadava Prakash, Hare Krishna. Yadava Prakash became his guru, was an impersonalist, and he had some very great disputes with his guru. You want to help him? Or? Because his guru, being an impersonalist, was offensive to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One of the things his guru did was he was quoting from the Chandogya Upanishad about the Lord's lotus eyes. So we know the Lord's lotus eyes are reddish, like a lotus flower. But this guru, he misinterpreted this particular verse to be that the Lord's lotus eyes were reddish like the rear end of a monkey. That's a great offense. To consider Krishna's eyes, you know, anyway, I can't even say it. I mean, it's just like, it's so offensive, I can hardly say it. And so when Ramanujacharya heard that, he started to cry. And his tears fell on the guru's back, because he was massaging his guru. And he gave his actual explanation of how the Lord's lotus eyes are as reddish as a lotus flower. And the guru got very angry. He thought, this disciple, he's offensive at my lotus feet. And then he defeated the guru another time. Because the guru said, the jiva soul is Brahman who became covered by illusion. You know, the supreme Brahman. And actually, there's nothing but Brahman. And Ramanujacharya said, that's ridiculous. Because there's nothing more powerful, nothing greater than Brahman. Because Brahman means the greatest. So then you're saying that illusion is greater than Brahman. This is one way to defeat the Mayavadis or impersonalists. Because they say Brahman is the greatest, we're all Brahman, but Brahman became covered by illusion. So you say, well, then illusion must be God, or greater than Brahman. So anyway, so he defeated his guru the second time, and so his guru thought, we got to kill this disciple. That's the standard when you don't like a disciple, you kill him. You know, just, anyway, I don't do that, don't worry. Haven't done that for years. So anyway, so he had a plan to kill the disciple. But he thought, you know, Yadava Prakash thought, if we kill the disciple, it's a little sinful, not too sinful. So therefore, what we have to do is bathe in the Ganges immediately after killing him. So if you're going to kill someone, bathe in the Ganges. Keep some Ganges water with you if you want to be a dacoit and spray yourself right after killing him. So he was thinking like that. So he said to Ramanuja at that point, let's go on a trip with all of our disciples to the Ganges, because in South India they don't have the Ganges. So they went on a trip to North India to the Ganges, and they were planning to kill. But what happened is that Ramanujacharya was informed about what was happening, and he escaped. He escaped in the middle of the night, and he went through the forest, and he was trying to find his way back to Kanchi. And what happened is that Lord Vishnu appeared to him in the middle of the night when he was looking. Lord Vishnu took the form of a hunter. Actually, it's described a fowler. That fowler means someone who hunts birds. So he took the form of a hunter of birds, and he guided Ramanujacharya back to Kanchipuram. Or somehow or other, magically, he was transported back to Kanchipuram. So when his guru got back there, and he saw Ramanujacharya there, he thought, oh my God, he's still alive. Because he thought he got lost in the forest. They didn't actually kill him, but they thought he got lost in the forest. So he continued to associate with his guru, and then he aggravated his guru even more because there was a princess, the king of Kanchi's daughter, who was haunted by a ghost. And so the guru was called to get rid of the ghost, and the guru couldn't do it. And then the ghost began to speak through the mouth of the guru, of the girl, and said, "The only way I'll go is if Ramanujacharya chants to me." And so the guru was thinking, "This, how can I be shown up by this disciple?" And so Ramanujacharya came and said to the ghost, who was a Brahma Rakshasa, "Go away, you know, Hare Krishna or Om Namah Narayanaya." And the ghost flew away, and the tree nearby broke down. That way they knew that the ghost had gone away. And so, actually, another point is the ghost previously laughed at Ramanujacharya's guru, which even made him more angry. So, and then finally, after Ramanujacharya explained this verse, Salvi Kalv, Kalv, Dalam Brahma, everything is Brahman, in the proper Vaishnava way, the guru said, "You know, you're out of here." He kicked him out. Of course, later we'll hear how the guru took initiation from his disciple. Because the guru's mother told him, "My dear son, your disciple is actually a pure devotee of Krishna, and you should take initiation." So that's another thing that happened. Also, with Madhvacharya, same thing. A similar thing happened. So then Ramanujacharya was married, as I mentioned before, and he was serving his guru, he was serving this great Vaishnava, Kanchi Purna, who was a disciple of Yamunacharya, and Ramanujacharya's wife didn't like it. Her name was Rakshakambo, and because she was from a high-class Brahmin family, and she really was upset that her husband was serving a Shudra, or who she saw as a Shudra. Of course, we know that Aho Bhattaswa Pachikto Garyan Yadi Vagare Vartate Namatubhyam Dabustuhus Juhuva Shashna Aryan Brahmanuchir Nama Grinandiyate. If one is chanting the Lord's name seriously, it's understood he's come to the platform of Brahman. So we don't consider someone's caste. Actually, if you consider a Vaishnava according to his caste, Jati Bhuti, that means you have you have hellish intelligence, or you consider the deity to be made of stone. So, what happened is that eventually Ramanujacharya renounced his wife, but we'll tell that story in a second. But in the meantime, Yamunacharya wanted to see Ramanujacharya. So he called for him to come. But by the time Ramanujacharya arrived in Srirangam, remember Ramanujacharya was in Kanchi, that Yamunacharya had passed away, had died. But he was lying there with three fingers being clenched, like this. That means it clenched, like that. And Ramanujacharya said, "What? Has he always been like that?" And the disciple said, "No." And then Ramanujacharya says, "That must mean something." And he said, "It means that Yamunacharya had three aspects to his mission that he didn't accomplish. One was to teach the people in general about Krishna consciousness, to write a Vedanta commentary, and to name one disciple, Parashara Muni." And so as Ramanujacharya said that, Yamunacharya's fingers opened, 1, 2, 3, like that. So everyone understood that Ramanuja was the next Acharya in the Sri Sampradaya. So then he returned to Kanchipuram, and at that time he was very disinterested, looking for an opportunity to renounce this material world. And Krishna presented an opportunity. What happened is that he invited this great Vaishnava, Kanchipurna, for dinner. Kanchipurna came early. Ramanujacharya's wife served Kanchipurna, and then afterwards she threw all the remnants and away and gave them to Shudras and purified the place with cow manure. And so Ramanujacharya came home And he said, my dear wife, where are the remnants of my guru? And she said, I threw him out and gave him to a Shudra. And he got angry at that point. And then there was another thing that caused Ramanujacharya to completely renounce his family. This is similar to Prabhupada's history, where Prabhupada's wife sold his Bhagavatams for tea biscuits and said, you know, I'd rather have tea than you, to Prabhupada, and created so much havoc in Prabhupada's preaching. So what happened was that Rakshakambal, who was Ramanujacharya's wife, was taking water out from a well. At the same time, Ramanujacharya's Vaishnav, let's say Siksha Guru there, his wife, who was also a Shudra, was taking water out of the well, and some water went from the Ramanujacharya's Siksha Guru's wife's bucket into Ramanujacharya's wife's bucket, and Ramanujacharya's wife just threw the whole thing away, said, ugh, become contaminated. And when Ramanujacharya heard that, he said, that's it, I'm leaving. And he had a whole trick. He sent a note to his wife that was supposed to be coming from his wife's father. And that note said, there's a marriage in our village. You should go immediately. And the note came, and Ramanujacharya made believe the note didn't come from him. It's very tricky. And his wife said, well, there's a marriage, I have to go. Just like you see, there's a marriage, people fly all over the world nowadays for marriages. Not for sannyasas, just for marriages. So, isn't it engagements, marriages? What can you do? So Ramanujacharya said to his wife, okay, don't worry, I'll join you shortly. But then as soon as his wife left, Ramanujacharya ran to the riverbank and took sannyas. He waited, you know, was watching. His wife went out into the distance, Haribo! And then he took sannyas. And he became known as Yatiraj. Yatiraj means the king of the sannyasis. And his first disciple, practically immediately he started initiating, was Dasarathi, his cousin. His second disciple was a devotee named Kuresha, who had a photographic memory. And Kuresha also preached to Yadava Prakash, who was Ramanujacharya's previous spiritual master, and helped convince Yadava Prakash, and also Yadava Prakash's mother, convinced Yadava Prakash that he should take initiation from Ramanujacharya. So Yadava Prakash took initiation from his guru, and he became known, from his disciple, sorry, and became known as Govinda Jihar, a very famous devotee in the Ramanuja Sampradaya, Sri Sampradaya. So there's many interesting stories about Ramanujacharya. He left Kanchi eventually, and the main deity in Kanchi is called Virata Dharaja, which means the wish-fulfilling deity. It's interesting. Normally they keep the deity submerged in the water because he's a wood deity, and they take him out, I think, every 14 years or something like that. So anyway, then he went to Srirangam, and he studied under another disciple of Yamunacharya known as Mahapurna. And then he was sent to another disciple to learn, to get his mantra initiation. And he was begging many times for the mantra. Eventually, Goshtipurna said to him, I will give you this mantra, but if this mantra is repeated to anyone, they will get liberated, so you are forbidden. It's a secret mantra, I guess. Even though everybody knew it. Anyway, it's a secret mantra, and don't repeat it to anyone. This is my instruction. If you violate my instruction, you go to hell. So he gave that instruction to Ramanujacharya, and he gave him the mantra, which is Om Namo Narayanaya. And Ramanujacharya, immediately after taking initiation, got up on the tallest building in the city and said, everybody who wants to go back to Godhead, repeat this mantra. It's Om Namo Narayanaya, Om Namo Narayanaya. So we initiated the whole town. And the guru rushed out and said, you're going to hell. You disobeyed my instructions, you nonsense. And Ramanujacharya said, that's fine. As long as these people can go back to home, back to Godhead. And then the guru bowed down at the disciple's feet and said, "You're much better than me." So you see, I mean, this is, he kept defeating his gurus, you know, which is really interesting. So then Ramanujacharya began to travel, and he regulated deity worship all over South India. But then he went to Jagannath Puri. He tried to regulate the deity worship in Jagannath Puri, but Lord Jagannath didn't appreciate that. He liked more spontaneous worship, and so Lord Jagannath kicked him out of Jagannath Puri. He went flying through the air, and he ended up in Kurukshetra. Kurukshetra is the place where they worship Kurmadev, the tortoise incarnation of the Lord. I've been there. It's a very wonderful place. They actually have little, they have a whole garden of turtles there. Anyone been to Kurukshetra here? Yeah, you've been there. And they have a whole garden of turtles, and you play with the turtles and everything like that. So when he got to Kurukshetra, he thought it was a temple for Lord Shiva, and then he was informed that it was a temple for Lord Vishnu. Then he wrote his Sribhasha. Sribhasha is the commentary, Vedanta commentary of the Sri Sampradaya. Every Sampradaya has to have their commentary. Of course, our natural commentary is Srimad Bhagavatam and also the Govinda Bhasha, written by Baladev Vidyabhushan and dictated by Govindadev, the deity. Then he had some problems with the king of Chola, whose daughter he previously saved from the ghost. So the king of Chola wanted everyone to worship Shiva. And he said, "Let me speak to this Ramanujacharya. And I want him to worship Shiva too. If not, I'm going to kill him." So one of Ramanujacharya's disciples, his name was Kuresh, put on Ramanujacharya's clothes. And he went to the king. And the king said, "Are you going to worship Shiva?" And he said, "Well, Shiva's a great devotee, but he's not God. Vishnu is God." And so what happened is the king blinded him. He took out this devotee's eyes, you know, poked out the devotee's eyes. The king later died from throat cancer. He became known as Krimi Kanta, which means worm throat. That was the king's nickname because the king died because of this offense. And then later on, Ramanujacharya said to this disciple, "Go to the deity of Varadaraja and ask him for your eyes back." And so this disciple was such a great devotee, he went to the deity and he prayed for the king's salvation rather than asking for his eyes back. And then Ramanujacharya said, "Don't you understand? Your eyes belong to me. I'm your guru. They're not your property. I told you to ask for your eyes back." So he went to the deity of Varadaraja again, said that there's some property of my guru. Can I have it back? And then then he fainted and his eyes came back. It's an amazing story. Varadaraja means the wish-fulfilling deity. Then he had so many interesting pastimes. Another time he had an argument with 1,000 Jains and he defeated them and they all committed suicide after that. He defeated them. Another story is that he had one famous person who became his disciple. His name was Donner Das. This Donner Das was walking with his girlfriend and he was fanning her and holding an umbrella over her head. It was like his Rath Yatra. Rath Yatra for his girlfriend. So at the same time, the devotees were there and they started laughing at him. And they said, "What a jerk this guy is. You know, he's fanning his girlfriend like she's the supreme personality of Godhead." And Ramanujacharya said, "You be quiet. I want to speak to the guy." And he said, asked for the guy to come over. And this person came over. And Ramanujacharya said, "Why are you doing this?" And this person, Donner Das, he said, "The reason I'm doing this is that she has beautiful eyes. You know, I have never seen such beautiful eyes in my life." And Ramanujacharya said, "If I can show you someone with more beautiful eyes, will you go to see them?" And he said, "Sure." And so that night he took him to see the deity. And the man said, "Wow, that's more beautiful eyes than my girlfriend." But then still Ramanujacharya arranged for this Donner Das to get married to his girlfriend. He didn't say take sannyas, he said get married. And he became so detached that it was amazing. He and his wife became great pure devotees, more advanced than the sannyasis. Because the sannyasis in Ramanujacharya Sampradaya were criticizing this Dhanardas. They say, he's living with his wife, she has jewelry, she has saris. We're sannyasis. We're great. And Ramanujacharya said, all right, I'm going to show them. So what he arranged was in the sannyasis were all sleeping in the sannyasa ashram, he switched their clothes on them. You know, he took one person's clothes, put them on next to someone else, and the sannyasis woke up and they began fighting each other. You know, these renounced personalities began to punch each other and fight each other. And Ramanujacharya said, see how renounced you are? And then the next day he said to his disciples, go steal Dhanardas's wife's jewelry. And so they went while Dhanardas was with Ramanujacharya, his guru. And she was sleeping. They stole the jewelry on one half of the body. And she turned over and scared them away. You know, basically. And so when Dhanardas came home and the disciples of Ramanujacharya were looking in the window, they saw that he asked his wife, why do you have jewelry on half your body? And she said, well, your guru's disciples stole the other half and I turned over so they could take the other half. And he chastised his wife. He said, why did you scare them off? You should have just given them the jewelry. And so when the sannyasis saw that, they understood that he was much more renounced than them who were fighting over their clothes. So then as far as the disappearance day, there's many other stories I don't have time to tell, but it's almost time to, it is time to end class. He told his disciples they would leave, he would leave this world, and they gave him, he gave them three instructions. Well, actually, four instructions to his disciples as he was leaving this world with his head on one of his disciples' laps. The first instruction was, always serve Vaishnavas, which is what I said the other day. Two, have firm faith in the Vedas and the devotees. Three, conquer lust, anger, and greed, which I also mentioned the other day in regard to the tongue. And four, always worship Narayan, the Supreme Personality of God. And as he passed away, actually right before he passed away, he installed a deity of himself. He actually breathed on one particular deity that was made of him. And he said, Nat, you can worship this deity. And also, he instructed his disciples to preserve his body. So his body is still preserved in Srirangam. Anyone seen his body in Srirangam? You were with us in Mukha. You didn't see, you went out with us, didn't you? Where were you that day? You didn't see. Anyway, so his body is still there, sitting with his danda. And he's wrapped. It's like a mummy type thing. And the hair and the nails are still growing on the body of Sripad Ramanujacharya. And that's in Srirangam. So anyway, so today is the appearance day of Sripad Ramanujacharya. And we very much worship him. And the Ramanujacharya understanding of the philosophy is very similar to our understanding of Sri Vaishnavism. Okay, any questions or comments before we greet the deity? It's time. Questions, comments, arguments, problems? Later. Later questions, comments. Anyway, so the main thing is one should be detached from this world. It doesn't matter whether one is a householder or brahmachari or sannyas. One should be detached from this world and attached. The only way you'll be detached from this world is being attached to Krishna Katha. The hearing and chanting of Krishna's names, pastimes, qualities, the holy Dham, the devotees, pastimes, qualities, etc. We should absorb ourselves like this, then real detachment from this material world comes, because everything's going to be taken away anyway by the time factor. Your youth, kamala dala jala, jivana talamala. If this life is like a lotus, water on a lotus leaf. Lotus leaf has a waxy covering. And when the lotus leaf turns over, water is finished. So this life is such. Sita atapa vatapurishna. But we are struggling, trying to enjoy, trying to squeeze every bit of enjoyment possible out of something that's not enjoyable. This is foolish, isn't it? Anyway, punak punas char vita charvadam. Okay, on that happy note, we can end class. All glory is to